Welcome to the Strength Connection Podcast, a show to share stories, insights, and experiences from some of the greatest coaches in the world. I'm Michael Kurkowski, so grateful for you joining me today. And if you like this episode, please like, share, and subscribe to support the show. All right, let's dive in. Here we go.
All right, and we're live. Stephen Webster, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, how's your day going, man?
My day is going good. This is obviously the best part of the day, I hope.
But, 100 high expectations right off the bat. Well, I appreciate you coming on. I'm honored to have you. We got connected from a mutual friend in Eric. Told me a lot about the work that you're doing. I think it's fascinating. Anytime I think of the coaching industry and where technology is fitting in, I think it's a really interesting conversation from not just the, you know, wearables came out a long time ago. These things have been going on, but then now with everything with AI and how that operates. And then I've talked with a lot of coaches too of, well, how is it still a human response? You know, how do we not give all the power away to technology? And from our conversation last week, prepping for this, you're really trying to put both of these things together in the best way with a sensei.
Yeah. You just reminded me, I'm going to go off script from the very beginning, but you just reminded me very early, this is almost 10 years ago, we wanted to just do some customer discovery, like let's find out people's attitudes and behaviors and just workshop. And we picked the sport of rowing as a good sport to start, because, you know, as I'm sure we'll talk about, Asensi cares deeply about technique and form, and in rowing, you know, technique and form is pretty much the difference between first place and last place. And so we went to Serra High School in California. I'll name drop them. Tom Brady's old school. Okay. And we met with the rowing program there. And I'd organized this whole design workshop. You know, the school was all excited that the kids would get to participate in this product ideation. And one kid got an exemption because he didn't want to have anything to do with robots taking over the world. And so he got an exemption from school. So
as he puts on the tinfoil hat and leaves.
He literally left. His teacher excused him. He didn't want to have any part with technology, getting rid of coaches. But I tell you what, I'm telling you this story almost 10 years later because it was a really key insight that we couldn't be bringing technology to market. You know, as I'm sure we'll unpack, I'm a coach that celebrates coaches and coaching. So I never wanted to be responsible for some technology that presumes to be better than a coach at coaching, as opposed to how can we elevate coaches and how can we scale coaching in a way that only digital can. So yeah, you just reminded me of the robo overlords at Serra High School.
That's it. And I'm sure it's not the last person that ever said something about, oh my God, what the heck are you doing to this world and stuff. Yeah, I was one of those for a bit too. I mean, like kind of the purist of it. And you kind of, you know, when you hear about new ideas and new technologies, I think it just as human nature, sometimes the first thing you do is you want to step back into your comfort zone of being like, well, no, this is how we've done it. This is how we're doing it. And then I looked into a lot of technologies. I use many technologies in my own coaching and realize how efficient and how effective it can be with it. And from the work that you've done with Asensi, and we're going to get into it. I want to know a lot about the work that you're doing with this. And there's a couple terms that I'm going to bookmark on that I want to ask you about, which I love, is you call it human movement recognition, which I think is a really fascinating term, which I'm sure we'll dive into. But before we get so deep into the weeds, Stephen, you've got a big background of movement in yourself, specifically in the martial arts based world. Sure. Was that your first introduction, like as an early child, of human movement and kind of health and fitness, that type of world?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I grew up in Scotland. You know, this is not a California accent, although my friends from Scotland would argue otherwise. But I grew up in Scotland. And like many of us, and certainly like any kid in Scotland at the time, you know, grew up outdoors on fields, playing sport, playing soccer, football, you know, swimming, windsurfing, golf, hockey. But the thing that I really took to more than anything else, the thing I became utterly obsessed with starting age 7 was martial arts. My parents took me to a judo class when I was 7. And it was all about, you know, I was kind of being a little bit bullied by other kids and like lacking in confidence. And I don't know where they got the idea from, but they were like, you know, we'll stick them in a judo class. Mm-hmm. And that quickly became jiu-jitsu. The judo class, it folded and the instructor had to move away. Mm-hmm. And I found this jiu-jitsu class probably around the age of 8. And that was it. That it was the beginning of a lifelong obsession of studying martial arts. That took me all the way to, by the time I went to university in, kind of aged 18, I was already a black belt in jiu-jitsu. I was one of the first kids in the UK to be allowed to grade as an adult, which is another story. So I was already a black belt in jiu-jitsu, but I went to university and I kind of, I've always been academic and I've always been athletic, right? And I was like, I can't just be a bookworm at university. I want to play a sport. I want to play in a team. And so as I walked around that sports hall, kind of week one of university, saw the two karate clubs, because my jiu-jitsu instructor wanted me to open a, start a jiu-jitsu club at the university, expand the organization. I said, but I want to compete in a sport. So there were two karate clubs, and I kind of went to them both. It was like, which one wins more medals? Which is the harder team to get into? And they were like, this one here. I was like, that's the one I want to be in. And so I joined the club, very quickly was competing, ended up captaining, and then ultimately coaching the club. I coached the club for over 10 years. Proud of taking the club to 10 consecutive national championship wins, but even more proud when I moved to California, they won 8 more. After I was no longer there.
Oh, no way. Okay.
But most of the instructors at that time, I taught, and most of the ones I taught since they'd been a white belt. So they were my students who'd become instructors who then went on to be successful, tournament winning instructors. And so yes, is the quick answer to your question. My passion for, I often describe it as like your ability to unlock someone's potential through first unlocking their athletic potential. That came through study of martial arts, both as a student and as a teacher. And I found a passion for coaching, probably almost more than the passion I had for learning, kind of deep reward in coaching others. And I'm sure we'll get into Ascensi, but really it reflects that passion for coaching and that idea of everything that becomes digital is able to be done at a greater scale. And so what if access to world-class coaches and world-class coaching was available to us all at digital scale? We couldn't just train with the person that happened to be in our zip code, but you could train with, the best kettlebell instructor in the world, or the best, jiu-jitsu instructor in the world, or the best karate instructor for foot sweeps. You can really kind of niche down. And so that's always been the North Star. That's always been, you can tell the guy that worked for Microsoft, they just said North Star. But that's always been the North Star is, how can we democratize access to world-class coaches and coaching?
Yeah. I love what you said there about accessing your full potential starts with the physical. It's been a conversation I've had recently a lot with different coaches on the podcast and some different groups that I'm in, because there's kind of this debate about what comes first, physical and mental strength, and I think a lot of people say, you need a strong mind. It's like, well, if you work on a strong body first, it's going to flow downstream into the mind. You get better physically, you feel better, you feel more confident. It's natural.
But then in martial arts, we often say where the mind goes, the body follows. So, it's almost the opposite. It's funny. I worked for Adobe. Adobe moved me to California. My wife moved me to California, if she's watching, but Adobe paid for it. I sold my first company to Adobe. I loved working there. Then Adobe went into this direction of like ad tech and marketing technology. And it just felt really, and I love the company and I love what they're doing now, but there was a period I was like, this is soulless. This is not who the company is. It's not creative. So I had that kind of moment of, do you want to sell sugared water for the rest of your life? I definitely had that moment. And I really wanted to do something in health. I was like, that would be, my parents like worked hard to pay for me to go to university in like health. That's like noble. That's like, health technology. But I wasn't a doctor. And I just had this realization through that period of, but I was a pretty good coach. And the coaching, as I go on to meet my students many years later, they all say the same thing, that I learned more in the dojo and more on the tatami on the mat than I did in the lecture hall about law or medicine or economics or whatever, or engineering. And that the lessons they learned about themselves, going through a progression of, let's call it white belt to black belt, have served them far more in life. And so that idea has really stuck with me of, you know, our job as coaches is to just give people a glimpse of one part of their potential, but all else follows that.
Yeah. I want to bring you back, like at the beginning when you got into the first judo class, what was it about the martial arts that felt like it really called to you? You tried some other sports. It seemed like that didn't take as much. What was it about the art of judo, but just more like broadly martial arts, that seemed like it really aligned with you?
You're asking me to go back like almost 50 years. And it's not that other sports didn't take. I mean, I was, you know, I played for my school. I played for my, you know, scout troop. You know, I swam, I played football, I played cricket, I played hockey. So I was never the guy you picked first, but you usually picked me second or third. That was kind of across most sports. Right,
right there. Yep. That seems like where so many coaches come from too. They weren't the like the best of the best, but they were like one of the good ones, but just more like kind of in the middle of the pack, maybe above average. So had the skill, but had to work a little bit harder for the intricacies and the details of it, which sometimes leads to coaching.
Yeah. And I mean, you've asked that question that I've never really asked myself before. So I'm hearing myself answer it for the first time. And so I wonder if, because it kind of reflects where I am intellectually and academically as well. I was never the smartest person on my course at university, but I was damn sure going to come first in the class. And that was the martial arts ethic. That was the thing I learned there, which was, you know, I think one of the things you really learn in martial arts is you're the product of your own effort. You know, it's technique and it's repetition and it's practice. And for a lot of people, that repetition is boring. But if you don't put in the reps, and if you don't listen to the reps, if you don't understand rep to, maybe not rep to rep, but, you know, because that's just too much introspection, but you know, you need to really understand, be intentional in your practice, like what's the one thing I'm going to get better at in this technique over the next month, and how am I going to get better at it? And every single time you do a hip throw, or every single time you do an arm bar, it's like, I know I'm going to focus on making sure I don't do X, or making sure I do Y. Mm-hmm. And just that constant repetition, you know, they call it Kaizen in kind of martial arts, continuous improvement, right? So that Kaizen, that idea of continuous improvement, but you don't get it without putting in the work. That worked for me because, you know, it's who's the car company? It's like, we're number two, but that means we try harder. You know, it's that kind of mindset, right? And so that's who I was as a martial artist. I was never the strongest. I was never the fastest. I was never the most flexible by genetics. Mm-hmm. But I would always be there by hard work. And so, yeah, and as we get into Ascensi, like that's Ascensi very much reflects a team of martial artists and a team of coaches and a team of athletes who have really thought about, how do you go from zero to hero? How do you go from good to great? And how do you methodically coach people there? And it's that. It's, you know, I mean, coaching's easy, right? Just do this one thing ad infinitum. Just keep getting a little bit better and better, and you'll be a master. It's,
yeah, it is. And, you know, that path is, you know, everybody's going to have somewhat of a different one, you know, just based on their own personal experience.
Yes.
But if you can bring everybody into what's the one thing that's probably common amongst all of them, it's the volume. You know, it's just getting in the reps and just the work. And then I like what you said there, just to like find that one thing to work on. Maybe you suck at it right now and you'll keep sucking at it for a bit. Right. One of my favorite Kobe Bryant stories was one summer, he spent a whole summer league just working on his left hand. And he knew like he could do all the different stuff with his right hand. That was his dominant. So he went into this whole summer league where all these scouts were watching him, and he never used his right hand. So it didn't look like he was the best player out there, but he's like, I'm going to be the best player of all time. I don't care about
this. It's funny. I'll tell you another story then. So when I took over the karate club, man, we sucked. Yeah. My instructor had basically, for a whole bunch of wrong reasons, withdrawn us from the competitive landscape. And so the majority of the club had never really been in a competition before. And I took the club over like 2 weeks before the national championships. And I said, we're going to go to the nationals. We're going to enter everybody in every category. And we're going to get our asses handed to us. And the question is, what are we going to learn so that when we come back the year following, we win in every category? And that year following was year one of 10. But we did go and we did get our asses handed to us. But we got to experience the competitiveness of it, just the fear of walking into a sports hall, the fear of being in a changing room when your opponent's a foot taller than you and looks like they've been in the gym longer than you. And like, we got to experience all of that. But when I took the club year two, I was like, how are we going to do this? Like, how are we going to win across every category? How am I going to train white belt to black belt, male, female, beginner? And there was a story about the All Japan Karate Championships where a famous Japanese martial artist, Kanazawa Sensei, broke his arm. So it was the Kobe Bryant story that reminded me of this. He broke his arm and his mother at the tournament told him, you have a left arm. Use that one. And he famously won the All Japan National Karate Championships with his left arm with one punch, the reverse punch. And, you know, I'm an unorthodox 20-something in this story, right? So I was like, that's how we're going to win the national championships. I'm only going to let the club use one punch. And so we went and we were only allowed to use reverse punch. And anytime we trained competition in the class, we were only allowed to use reverse punch, which seems super boring, but we taught timing and distance and combinations. We taught people to read their opponent, when their opponent was going to move, how to steal time, how to vector, when to break. So we layered tactics on first and repertoire on last. And for years, we were the most boring club to watch, but we won every damn medal, bronze, silver, and gold in every category. And if you fast forwarded about 4 or 5 years, every club was doing exactly the same thing. That's how they were trying to win tournaments. And we changed the game. But to your point, with this relentless focus on like, what's the one thing we can do well? And that's the philosophy of a sensei in any sport, in any movement, is bring mindfulness and intention to practice and really focus people on what's the one thing they need to know right now, and how can we show them an example of good, and how can we anchor that? And then we'll repeat, then we'll move on to the next thing and the next thing.
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, there's that cliche term we say, like, fall in love with the process, you know, not the destination, right? It's like, it's not about the goal, it's about the journey. And it's a fun thing to say. It's like self-evident. We know, yeah, but yeah, it's so boring and it's so freaking trite. And it's hard to adopt that into a culture of it. So what you said about like giving a specific thing to aim on during that, to kind of master that one specific spot, you're probably going to get better at everything else, you know, just from doing the work.
Right. And you're getting the reps in, but they don't feel like reps, right? Because you're thinking about something else.
Yeah. What was that? How was the response from that, from the team? Like when you first took it over from there, cause like it's not fun getting your ass kicked from there and moving, but it seemed like you had a pretty good transition of culture right off the bat. How was that early stages with the team?
I think if you go to Glasgow, you should have a 50-50 chance you're going to get your ass kicked, whether you're in a karate competition or not. So there was that.
Environment is very important, right?
You can take the man out of Edinburgh, but you can't take Edinburgh out of the man. No, I mean, culture was a huge part. And, you know, I would love to sit here and tell you that I knew that and that was intentional. But it was accidental, but then observed and then iterated on and improved on. We had a super strong culture within the club. And, you know, martial arts can be very intimidating. Like when you walk into, I remember walking into that club as a student, and even though I was already a black belt, and I was early in first there, and anyone that knows me will be no surprise there that I was like 15 minutes early for the appointment. But I was still super intimidated. I wore a white belt. I didn't want anyone to know I was a black belt in case I was a mark. And it's like, let's show the black belt how good we are. So super intimidated. And I remembered that as a coach, like about just how intimidating it is. And the captain of the club, my day one, walked in to the dojo second, and he was super nice to me, super nice. And really imposing and intimidating. And then shook my hand and said, my name's Ant. If you've got any questions or if you get stuck on anything, just come and ask for me. My name's Ant. And that was it. I felt like, you know, this is going to be okay. And so that was always the culture I tried to create, was like, how can we make sure that people, you know, get to know their community and get to know the other people in the club? And, you know, the instructors aren't these like assholes that like, look at me, I'm a black belt and I'm going to yell at you and shout at you. And I just always believed that people were there to be educated, not there to be disciplined, right? And again, you know, coming back to Asensi, that's been a big thesis of ours, is like, when you're learning physical exercise or a sport or fitness or kettlebells, most people want to understand the why behind the what. They want to feel like they're getting smarter at the thing and not just better at the thing. And I think that's an opportunity that digital can unlock as well.
Yeah. I think it's such a powerful point you made there, Stephen, too, about even though you're already good at something, it's just stepping into a new arena. There's that apprehension. It's still scary. It's funny. There was a couple of years ago, I was on a business trip, and, you know, for a while before that, because it was right after COVID, I really only trained by myself, you know, in my own space, like just I had my work. And then I went to a local gym where there was a lot of people out in Phoenix that I didn't know. And I'm like kind of nervous, like walking in, like, cause it's a new spot. Yeah. I'm like, I've been training for 15 years. I know exactly what I'm doing in a gym, but still it's like, you're a little apprehensive stepping in to a different environment. And how many people I know who, like, regardless of their fitness level or their expertise in something, still, when you're doing something, it's getting rid of that unknown, gives you that peace, gives you that little bit of confidence. That's why I think the technology and the work that you give with something like Asensi can be so powerful. It just gives you that, takes the unknown out of it and starts just giving you some real good feedback.
No, I mean, Planet Fitness coined a term that, you know, we've all stolen of gymtimidation, that intimidation of walking into a gym, right? And that's actually a use case for our technology is, you know, many people aspirationally would love to do yoga or would love to do Pilates or love the idea of taking a boxing class, even if it's like a cardio boxing class, like a Rumble or, you know, whatever. But there's that fear of, I got to walk in there. I don't know what I'm doing. Everybody's going to be looking at me because I'm the newbie that doesn't know what they're doing. And so that's a great example where we found, if we can teach a machine to understand movement, and if we can use that as the enabling technology for a whole host of new experiences where you can practice at home, but that's no longer unsupervised practice. It's supervised practice. And it's practice that has a feedback loop that, you know, Michael, stand shoulder width. Those are not your shoulders. Bring your feet in a little bit. Good. Okay. Now step your left foot back. Okay. That's called orthodox. So that's called southpaw. So that, like, that learning moment where I can make you familiar with the thing, familiar with the arena you're about to enter, right? I can teach you 8 foundational yoga poses. I can teach you a basic hinge. I can teach you, et cetera, a left jab and a right cross, so that I'm lowering that intimidation threshold that when you walk into the actual facility, it's like, I sort of know what I'm doing. I've done it before and I've had some feedback that I'm not doing it wrong. And I know the terminology and I know the exercises. So that's a great example of where, you know, we try to think about applying our technology for brick and mortar. Like, you know, it can be an acquisition channel for you if you can meet people where they are, literally where they are at home and mentally where they are, intimidated, and you can create this digital on-ramp to the physical environments that we've all grown up loving training in, right?
Right. So getting into really the work that you're doing with Asensi, and for listeners, if you don't see it, it's Asensi. I want to go into how did this product really come to fruition from thoughts? Because we've been talking a lot. You have a big background in martial arts, but you're also an engineer. You've worked with Adobe. You worked with Microsoft, and in Microsoft worked with things like Kinect, with Xbox Fitness. So some of these health things that, you know, you saw kind of from the beginning, you know, of going on. When did the first idea of Asensi start coming into your mind?
When I was 7.
Really?
Listen, I grew up, my dad I'm retired now, but electronics engineer. He worked on fighter aircraft. He worked on, you know, vision goggles for fighting, you know, VR in the 70s and the 80s, right? So I was the kid in a 50,000 person town that had a computer before anyone else did. You know, I had a dad that, you know, I had the very first Pong game ever in town that my dad had built from a magazine, you know, getting parts on the back of a magazine, and somehow convinced my mum it was going to be safe to plug this thing into the back of our TV. So I always grew up around, I remember going on a family holiday on the train to Torquay in the South Coast, and my dad saw a Space Invaders machine in a skip. It had been thrown out. And he rescued all the boards and like spent a summer trying to get that thing up and running. I never got up and running again, but you know, but that was kind of like, so I grew up playing a ton of sport, but I was also like really nerdy with computers and electronics. So, you know, I would be practicing on my punch bag in my garage and like, hey dad, can I stick like a sensor on this? I mean, this, we're in the like 1980s here. can I stick a sensor on this that'll, tell me how hard I hit it, or can I stick a light on it that will tell me my reaction time? Did I, you know, when it lights up, how fast did I punch the bag? My hockey goals, like I wanted to have a red light on my hockey goals that would go off if I, you know, put a ball in the back of the net. So I've always, I mean, genuinely, I'm not backing into this story. I've always just been like these worlds of tech and solo practice, because I was the kid that it was dark and I was in the garage hitting the punch bag. I was shooting pucks into the net off a piece of plywood in my parents' backyard. I was always practicing myself and yearning that feedback, yearning that reinforcement. And then as a university coach, you know, one of the challenges teaching at a university is you see your students and then you don't see them for several months, right? They're away for the summer or right. They're away for a month over the exam season. But they want to keep practicing with you. So I had one of the first karate websites, literally one of the first karate websites ever online, trying to provide written instructions that my students could read from home, you know, books, DVDs, MP3 files on Diamond Rio MP3 players. Like I tried everything to like, how can I pass on my instruction to my students when I'm not there? And it was in my time at Microsoft, I was exposed to Kinect and computer vision and gesture recognition, Cortana. Now, Cortana, everybody thinks is the poor person's Siri, but Cortana was this bigger initiative around intelligent agents and in-ear, you know, in-ear specialists that might be health or fitness or finance or whatever. And this is at the time that the quantified self is happening and Fitbit's happening and wearable is happening. And I just had a moment at Microsoft of like, you know, that itch I've always, always wanted to scratch of, can you teach somebody physical exercise, fitness, sport, physical therapy? Can you supervise otherwise previously unsupervised practice because there's a machine there? I think it's possible. So this was like 2013 or thereabouts. One of my mentors in martial arts, who's now my CTO of Asensi, he was the first guy I called. I was like, Bill, I know you've just sold your speech recognition company and you think you're going to retire, but I think we need a movement recognition company. And he was like, give me a month, I'll kind of tool around and see if I can get something working. And he got something so crude working. But I remember him sending the demo to me, and I was literally standing in Seattle ready to board a plane from Microsoft back to San Francisco. And I saw this demo and I got on that plane and I texted my wife, I was like, I'm going to quit. Like, we can do this. Mm. You know, this is possible. So that's how it all began.
Wow. Okay. So then at that point there, I mean, I remember the Kinect and stuff like that. And I thought this was like a huge thing that came out, just like the gesture recognition and stuff like that, you know, from there. What were the things that were like you wanted to make sure that a sensei had when you got in that you weren't seeing from other things?
I think Kinect, which was a phenomenal piece of technology, and I'm, you know, dear friends with a couple of the inventors of it now, you know, post Microsoft. But still the end experience was still very much kind of a fun game, right? Can I see high knees or can you touch something on the screen?
Right.
For the underlying capability of that technology, it was really about how can we make a more interactive games machine? How can we make the Xbox interactive? It was never intended for the use cases I'm exploring, which is like, could I coach you baseball? Could I coach you strength training? Could I coach you yoga? Right. And then one of the things I got, but it unlocked potential. It gave me a glimpse of what I often call the art of the possible. It's like, right, wait a minute, a machine can motion capture a human being. Surely it's not a stretch. And I always have thought of the analogy of speech recognition. The Kinect is the equivalent of a microphone plugged into the back of your PC. It digitizes something analog about a human. Instead, you know, a microphone digitizes our voice, but it's just a WAV file. The computer has no idea, you know, are you speaking English? Are you speaking French? Are you speaking past tense? Are you speaking present tense? Are you speaking about what you had for dinner or what you're going to have for dinner? It's just a WAV. It's ones and zeros that represent your voice. And Kinect is kind of the same. It's kind of ones and zeros that represent your posture. But I extrapolated that to, like, I'm pretty confident we could say, this is a baseball swing, this is a golf swing, this is a kettlebell swing, this is a reverse punch, this is a roundhouse kick. And then the other big thing for me, which was a big part of what I learned at the university, is how do you then construct a teaching syllabus so that you have, and like martial arts is always, like, I think one of the greatest gifts of martial arts was the belt system. It's a really structured, methodical way of thinking about goals and milestones and checkpoints and progressions and regressions. And build. And so I had this notion of every sport, every fitness activity, physical therapy, they could all be, you don't need to literally be a green belt in yoga, but the underlying system of a machine knowing how to meet you where you are and knowing how to take you to where you need to go is basically a digitization of that belt system. And then the last part was, could I turn that into a voice in your ear? Could I just give you the feeling of there is somebody over your shoulder right now watching you and telling you exactly what you need to hear, which might be as simple as counting out your reps, might be telling you shoulders back, eyes forward. It might be like great correction, or it might be, hey, I want to teach you something. Let's break it down into parts, do the parts and put the parts back together again. But those were the kind of building blocks that I felt, this is all coming together. It's all going to be possible. And as soon as I felt that, I felt this like urgency of like, if I don't do this, somebody else is going to do
right.
It. I got to quit my job.
It's a it's a fast moving industry with technology from there. So that's a lot. That's interesting because, like, I could see it from Kinect and a lot of technology. Like, it gives you a snapshot, like a projection of it. I like what you said with a microphone. Like, it can't tell you what language you're speaking. It's just projecting the word, the noise.
It's a representation. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I thought the same thing with there. So making it into something that can actually recognize if something's performing well or not and where to make corrections. Was this a technology that you had to invent in there? Was there things that were already, like, that you could take and bring into this? Or was that, like, what's been the process of bringing this really from soup to nuts, from not just concept to now actually into application?
I mean, one of the things I got wrong was I looked at that Microsoft Kinect. I was like, there's no way that's going to come down to a form factor smaller than that. Like, it's a depth camera. There's a ton of compute power. It's connected to an Xbox, for goodness sake. That's like a pretty fast games machine. I didn't imagine that amount of compute power and technology and lenses making it down to something the size of an iPhone. So I kind of quickly disqualified cameras and computer vision as the right way to do motion capture. And remember the world we're in. This is 2013, 2014. You know, we're starting to see Under Armour put heart rate sensors embedded directly into the shirt. You know, wearables, super exciting. Smart textile is like a thing. And so I had this thesis of, what if we could put sensors in your sports clothing? What if you just pulled on your Under Armour or your Lululemon base layer, and it was powered by a Sensi, and sensors at different points in the clothing would track your motion and track your movement? And so we basically took the guts of a Fitbit, the same three sensors, an accelerometer, a gyroscope, and a magnetometer. Together, you call them an IMU, an inertial measurement unit. And we basically, I've got photographs of me, you know, wearing wristbands and headbands, all with individual sensors on them. And that's what we brought to market first. We brought to market You can go today to Virus International and you can buy connected apparel that has a Sensi sensors embedded in it that works with our motion capture. So that was our thesis, is like, you're going to want to trail run. You're going to want to do yoga on the deck. You're not going to want to be tethered to your smartphone. However, what I got wrong was just, I mean, how fast has AI moved in the last 2 or 3 years?
I was going to say, it's got to be
how
like
much better has the compute got on these phones, the M1, yeah. M2, M3 chip. And so all of a sudden you don't need a Kinect. You can just use a cheap ass RGB camera that on a smartphone or a webcam or a TV. And you can use the computational capability of a phone or a set-top box or a smart television. And so now, in addition or instead of connected apparel, a Sensi can also use just a standalone camera on your phone or your webcam or your laptop or your TV or in your mirror. And we can instead motion capture you still in 3D, but just using that 2D camera. And so that's really been a huge unlock for us. So we get a 3D skeleton of your body, including distance from the camera, distance of any landmark from the camera. We reconstruct that from the $5 camera that's on all the devices that you own. And that's been a big unlock, because now anywhere there's a camera or a screen, we can motion capture you, recognize what movement you're doing, what modality, what sport you're doing it in, assess your performance, make decisions around what coaching we should give you, make decisions around, should that coaching be something we give you like now? Is it an intervention? Is it a coaching cue? Or do we wait until the next set and say, do 10 more, but this time I want you hinging at your hips rather than bending at your knees. You know, so that's the kind of experiences we unlock. And the last thing I would say for your viewers is we are an ingredient technology. Just like you buy a television and or a soundbar or headphones or an iPhone and the audio is probably Dolby Atmos. It's not, you know, LG and Sony. It's like the ingredient is Dolby. Or if you want badass graphics or AI, you have NVIDIA inside your product. You have an NVIDIA GPU. Essentially, is the ingredient for other brands to put. So we're working with brands like Chris Hemsworth Center, with PowerBlock, with Vertimax, so that they use our technology to make their products take on this capability of movement recognition, movement understanding, and real-time coaching.
Yeah. Wow. That's so there's a few threads that I want to pull on that there. So you said with the sensors that you got it wrong. Is it just that the time of just technology just advanced so much quicker on there, or was it really not working as much with the sensors?
No, let me be clear, especially in case my investors are listening, but I don't think we got connected apparel wrong. What I got wrong was how quickly computer vision would be credible as a motion capture technology.
Sure, that makes sense.
So I didn't think all of that complexity of the Kinect hardware would ever make it into a phone form factor or an ordinary TV. So that took us down the connected apparel route. The connected apparel, I mean, what's that saying? Any technology sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic. That's what it's like. Every time I put on our connected apparel, and I get real-time feedback on my form, even though I know down to the quaternion, down to the line of code, how that thing works, I just giggle with joy. I'm like, this is nuts. Like, we've invented clothing that understands our posture, that Bluetooths it to our phone and puts, you know, Steph Curry's voice in our ear, right? I mean, it's crazy.
It is, yeah.
It's nuts, and it works, and it's amazing. And I'll send you some videos afterwards. And I don't know if you want to put them in show notes, but I'll send you some
videos. Sure, absolutely. We'll put it all in. I'm fascinated by it. So essentially, with the Sensei, it's the technology of the motion recognition and the movement recognition capture. So you can use this in other things that you're working with, of different programs and stuff like that. Does the Sensei, did you also have like a specific program as far as like, you know, coaching that you're using inside of a Sensei along with the technology?
That's a great question. So we actually make the coaching configurable by coaches. So this comes back to the top of the show, right? We're not trying to replace coaches.
Yeah.
We're trying to capture their expertise so we can scale it on their behalf, right? And so we have this notion in our technology of what we call coaching strategies. So you'll know this, but from my world of karate, everybody teaches the same thing different. Everyone's got their own point of view on what correct is and what wrong is, and what the order of operations is. Like, do you teach a good hinge first, or do you teach something else first? And if you see, sorry if I'm pushing buttons here.
Personally, I can't stand when those things come up, because it's like when you teach a specific thing like a hinge and a squat, everybody's movement is going to look a little bit different based on their architecture. If you got a 6'6" basketball player and a 5'2" female over here, their movement is going to look very different, but you can still coach it very similar. And I think that's
what I say there is the expression of the movement is different, but the grammar of the movement is the same.
That's a good way to put it.
You and I will maybe say the same thing, and we'll choose different words, and we'll use different intonation, and we'll have different accents. But we'll probably stick to the same rules of grammar. Something always has to happen before the subject always precedes the noun or whatever.
Right.
And so it's the same with movement. When you get down to kinematics and biomechanics, nobody's going to ever pitch a baseball by, throw your arm, and then once your arm is all the way extension, start turning your hips into the right throw. The hips are always going to lead, and the elbow and the hand is going to follow. So we encode the biomechanics of the movement. That's how we teach essentially to understand movement. We say, what are the fundamental biomechanics? And we think of biomechanics as posture over time. It's just, think about, if you've ever seen these stroboscopic photographs of a pitcher pitching or somebody doing a dunk, it's all these snapshot moments in time. And that's how Essensi sees movement. Snapshot moments in time from 360 degrees from any angle. And as coaches, there might be certain frames that we'll discard. You're just flying your way up to the basket. But the takeoff point, at the takeoff point, I always want to see X. Or at the beginning of the swing, I always want to make sure your knees are here or your shoulders are stacked over your hips, right, or whatever it is. And so that's the grammar of posture and movement. And it's that grammar that we express to Essensi. So Essensi is then able to watch somebody do a movement and see you go through the sequence or see you miss parts of the sequence. And we call those nuances. As coaches, we're always looking for nuances of movement. A nuance might be something negative that we want to coach out, or it might be something positive that we want to make sure we
want to strengthen. Yeah,
exactly. And so Essensi is constantly first recognizing what you're doing, recognizing where you are in the sequence of doing it, and then in each moment, looking for all of the nuances that could possibly be true or false. And then making a decision based on what I know about this coach, which of these nuances would they intervene on? How would they intervene? Would it be in the moment? Would it be at the end of a set? Would it be at the start of the next set? And what would they say? What's the language they would use, or what's the coaching they would use? Or would this steer a progression, or would this steer a regression? And so that's what Essensi is essentially doing, just watching on your behalf the way you would watch and saying what you would say. But putting that as an ingredient in other people's tech.
So you mentioned earlier that you brought this to the rowing team over in California from there. Have you worked with this with other sports as well and seen how it works in all different types of movement and sport?
Oh, 100%. So rowing was rowing was supposed to be a niche market that if we screwed it up, no one would care and no one would notice. And then over the pandemic, rowing just kind of took off as a sport.
Everybody got a concept too in their house.
We accidentally have one of the highest rated apps in the app store for indoor rowing. If you've got a concept to rowing machine, you can find Essensi in the app store. And it was only ever meant to be an experiment of like, let's just go direct to consumer and let's engage with athletes directly and learn kind of what experiences people like and don't like when you've got this idea of being coached by a machine. But people love it. And we've got British rowing and New Zealand Olympic rowers and top coaches all coaching on the platform. But that's a sideshow now. We've worked on a number of different sports. Strength training is probably the most popular, in the world of connected fitness. Connected strength is a big growth area. So, Essensi has a repertoire now of, thousands of strength training movements and nuances and understanding of those movements. To give you some examples of customers, maybe that's a better way. So if you look at Alter, A-L-T-E-R, alterme.com, Connected Fitness Mirror, Lots of Nike DNA in that company. Mm-hmm. Very much a strength training platform for the general population, all based on systems of progression and retention, and progression and regression, and real-time feedback. So that's a connected strength product. Power Block, if you're familiar with the interchangeable sure. dumbbell from Power Block. We just at the Ursa event in LA, they were showing their Pro 50s. Essence is not just recognizing what exercise you're doing and giving you form feedback and rep counting and rep logging of your exercises. We've turned the smartphone into a scale. We can tell, did you pick up 20s or 25s or 50s? We can tell the weight.
Really?
Yeah. And we auto log the weight. And so now that we know your load and we know your technique, that really unlocks coaching. So that's Power Block. You must be familiar with Vertimax. So Vertimax are another customer of ours. And, you know, in the past, if you actually want to measure your jump performance, you're using force plates or you're using like microwave, you know, time of flight sensors. We're now using the smartphone. And so Vertimax will be, you know, shortly releasing a product powered by Essence where we'll tell how high you jumped. So not just how high you jumped, but was your jump technique correct? You know, did you perform the correct jump? Could you perform that jump better? And how does it impact your vertical? You know, can you get more vertical and more explosiveness? And then, you know, the other one I'll mention is Chris Hemsworth's company Center. You know, we're not sharing what we're doing with Center, but we're working with Center. Mm-hmm. And they recently merged in a sort of acquisition with Inspire Fitness. We make the training racks and strength training equipment. So there you've got a company that's got like physical equipment and digital content. And you can imagine how a technology like Essence can be the connective tissue between the two. So yeah, it's just a smattering of kind of strength and fitness and mobility and performance companies, but we're working in physical therapy. We've done stuff in baseball and basketball and yoga. So yeah.
I was going to mention
form is important. We can coach it.
Well, it's interesting. I didn't realize how much analytics was coming into play with all sports until I had a client who got drafted by the Dodgers and was working with a company, Driveline, with and the detail of stuff that they were looking at with everything from the drive of the front leg into the C that they call it, of the different movement of breaking things down, it kind of blew my mind of where things were going with movement and analytics of this. So, but I love the work that, you know, Stephen, like with guys like you who are doing things of trying to really solidify the grassroots of movement down, of just getting really the fundamental patterns down on all just different movement recognition in here. Cause after that, it's like, once you get that, some details and like some specifics come into play of keep elevating and going to an elite level.
Right.
But for 99% of the people, and specifically, you know, who, you know, people who listen to this program, which is mostly coaches who work with a lot of general population, but right. just understanding your movement and what's going on in just a general daily life and then getting into the gym is the most powerful information we can get.
And something I want to make sure people understand, because it certainly gets lost, is don't misunderstand a technology like Essence is only about like, you know, fine performance tuning of technique and form. Like once you've taught a machine to understand human movement, you unlock the kind of things that you and I do in a class or in a coaching session without even thinking about it. So let me give you some examples, right? If you were working with me as a sort of trainer-athlete relationship, you'll tell me to warm up. You're kind of a little bit tuned out as the warm up. You're thinking a little, no offense. You're thinking
I'm
a little
like, bit. I'm like, you watching about, me, man? Like, what's up?
Checked out on your phone. No, but you're like, okay, Stephen, drop mountain climbers and give me some rotation at the end of the mountain climber. Okay, you know, just do that for a few minutes. And you're thinking about the class ahead. You're trying to remember what you taught me the last time. You're trying to remember what we. But then as I'm warming up, you're also, Stephen looks a little sticky in his hips today. Hey, let's do a pigeon for a few minutes, or let's get the barbell and smash your traps. Or, you know, your observation of me warming up is changing my warm up and maybe even changing my programming. You were maybe thinking you were going to do a bunch of overhead presses, but you see, for whatever reason, my shoulders are just smashed today, and like, we're not going to do overhead presses. So just that act of passively watching me warm up is personalizing the experience that's about to follow, right? We do that digitally. We call it a smart warm-up, where we can just watch somebody warm up. We're not in your ear constantly in your mountain climber, make sure your knees are over your heels, you know, fine tune, just do your mountain climber. But we're observing your mobility. We might be adjusting some of the programming that's going to come, or we, an example I like to use, if I see you've got tight shoulder mobility and I'm asking you to do a downward dog in yoga, a great cue is to tell you to turn your thumbs to the front of the mat. I'm going to open up those shoulders. And I'm doing that because I already know you've got tight shoulders. The person on the mat never needs to know that, but that was the perfect cue to give them because of what you saw when they were warming up, right? You saw those tight shoulders. So that's a smart warm-up. In a class environment, how many times have you thought, we need to do like 40 kettle? Me, it's like, we got to do like 50 or 60 reverse punches. Like, we just got to get them in. How am I going to make this fun? How am I going to make this fun?
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, so I'll construct drills, right? I'll maybe do AMRAPs, or I'll do EMOMs, or I'll do partner drills. You do one, then I do one. You do one, then I do one. Well, if you've got a camera, you and I could be in our own garage training at the same time. And you do one, and then I do one, and you do one, and I do one. And are we competing against each other? Is it cumulative reps? So suddenly, if a machine understands movement, we can really reimagine how we deliver programming. We can really reimagine the warm-up experience, the cool-down experience. It's not all just like, I mean, at the end of the day, if I'd gone to karate class and my coach was like every 30 seconds giving me form feedback, class would have sucked. So that's not the only thing we're doing when we understand movement.
Yeah. So, Stephen, dude, this has been a blast. I really appreciate you coming on and, you know, telling me. I'm fascinated by this hybrid of how to incorporate coaching from a human perspective and bring the technology in. And I think you're really leading from the front with this, with a sensei. So I appreciate you coming on today, man.
Awesome. I enjoyed it. And, I'll give you links to some videos you can stick in the show notes. We just love people to even know that this stuff is possible. We're in that.
Absolutely.
Part.
Yeah. Right. And the more we can see it, the better. So yeah. And if people want to check out more of a sensei of the stuff that you're doing, what's a good place that we can direct them?
You know, we're pretty prolific on LinkedIn, sort of find me or find a sensei on LinkedIn. And we love to just kind of post sneaks and share, like, here's what we're working on. Here's what we're doing for Vertimax. Here's what we're doing for Power Block. And we get good engagement there. So that's a great place to follow us. Otherwise, you know, we have a newsletter that we send out once a month. So find us and find us on LinkedIn and sign up for our newsletter. And we won't spam you. You'll get no more than once a month. You'll get a little bit of an update from us. But thanks for having me on the show. I really enjoyed our conversation.
100%. I'm honored. Appreciate it. So listeners, check out the show notes. You can check out more from a sensei, and I'll catch you guys on the next one. All right. Peace.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you found some great value here. And if you like this episode, please drop a comment and leave us a 5-star rating and review. It does more to build the show than you can imagine. And do not forget to check out and join the Strength Connection Facebook group. In this group, I share the biggest takeaways and lessons from these amazing conversations, as well as training and strength tips for pursuing mastery and fulfillment in life. This group is filled with individuals looking to take full control over their strength, and it's the perfect space to explore new ideas and to share your journey. You'll also get exclusive access to the Strength Connection Mastery Seminars. It's a deep dive into the physical, mental, and spiritual training that you can begin using immediately. So do not wait. Go now. Seriously, go. All right, much love to you. Thank you so much, and I'll catch you on the next one.